Hi, welcome to another episode of the Leadership Enigma. Well, I keep saying to you that every week I'm always super excited to welcome a new guest, and I am very excited. You do not want to miss this episode, where I'll be talking to Scott O'Neill, who's the former CEO of the NBA Philadelphia 76ers, the National Hockey League New Jersey Devils, author, yes, you'll like this, of Be Where Your Feet Are, and all-round good guy who perhaps always was going to find his way into leadership for reasons that you will find out. Just come back to me after this quick break.
During constant change, your leadership has never been more important to create a better and more inclusive world. You're listening to The Leadership Enigma, a podcast for the insatiably curious to explore the power of human-centered leadership to create real momentum for positive and sustainable change. Whether you're an entrepreneur, business owner, or corporate executive, each week we speak to global experts, academics, rising stars, ambitious upstarts, and disruptors as we discover that success leaves clues. Now, here's your host, Adam Pacifico.
Well, there we go. It's a big, warm welcome to you, Scott. Thanks very much for being a guest on the Leadership Enigma.
Anytime you get a chance to be on a number one podcast... No, that's an easy yes for me.
Who knew that was even going to be a thing?
I love the journey you're on. I love your curiosity, your sense of discovery. Your background is fascinating. Hopefully we get into your background a little bit as well. But thrilled to be here. I'm happy, I'm present, and I'm grounded.
Well, that is high praise indeed. That really is, considering the background that we're going to talk about in relation to you as well. But no, really, it is a delight that you are a guest on the show. I know we had an opportunity to speak just a few weeks ago. And I want you to tell people a little bit about your story. And I'm going to ask you to go backwards in time to some of the early years, because when we were chatting, if ever there was someone who was perhaps always going to end up in leadership, it was probably you, for reasons that I'd love you to explain to the listeners, Scott. So give us a little bit of a background check.
You know, I have no idea if leaders are born or made. But in my career, I can tell you that I've seen some incredible leaders evolve and develop over time.
Yeah.
And I think I'm one of those. I'm not sure I was born a leader, but I was certainly sculpted into one. My folks, my parents, were leadership development trainers. They had their own little cottage, you know, mom and pop, literally,
yeah,
company. And so I grew up at 5 years old, like collating decks, you know, for them, for their team building or quality. I mean, they trained throughout the US, the UK, and Africa, companies like Texaco and Xerox and ADP, McDonald's. So it was a fun way to grow up. Both my parents are PhDs,
right.
So it was definitely a laboratory in our house, and they were trying different things. We had three rules growing up. We didn't have curfew. We didn't have our the way we grew up was very unique. I mean, our three rules were don't hurt each other,
right?
Don't hurt your mother, and no girls in the bedroom. And that was it. And there's some beauty in simplicity, you know, and we understood that. You know, it was us, family, family, family. I mean, that was something that we took to heart. And our mother, who is an incredible force for good still to this day. She's since retired, but she was a longtime leadership guru and then taught in a university in the U.S. And now you can find her on Twitter. And she's just an amazing, full of energy. I remember being 13 years old, and I was a tough kid. I was always in and out of trouble, And my mother said, "You're coming with me to Colorado." And I was like, "What are we doing?" I don't know if I was suspended or there's something happened at school that wasn't positive. And so I hopped on a plane, you know, in a little like Adidas jacket. I remember like what I was wearing. And I saw my mom train for 3 days. And at that time, you know, this is the 80s. So
yeah,
it was generally just white men and my mom, a little 5'2" Italian woman. And I just saw her for the first time as a giant. Like, she got up and she made them laugh and made them cry and made them think. And then at every break, there'd be a line of 15 people that just wanted to talk to her. And I had this incredible memory of going back on the plane with her and her going through the feedback forms. And it was scaled 1 through 5. And she had 1-4 and it drove her mad, you know?
And so, I know how that feels.
So many lessons there. you know, in the 80s, I mean, I've become quite a champion for, you know, I have three daughters as well. So quite a champion for women in the workforce. And quite an incredible advocate for those who study leadership, teach leadership, are passionate about leadership. Yeah. And I think that for me is, you know, I was somewhat grown. I played a ton of sports growing up. And I can't remember a team I wasn't a captain of. And that goes the same for my four siblings. They're all running companies except for my sister, who's since left. And now she's at coaching lacrosse, the national team lacrosse at IMG Academy in Bradenton, Florida. But it's a family of entrepreneurs. I'm the only, you know, sellout, if you will, that's gone corporate.
Yeah.
But my we were kind of born and bred to lead and be entrepreneurs.
Do you know what? I love this, Scott. I could basically base this entire episode just around that actual introduction, because so much comes out of it. I'm with you. You know, I've always said that, you know, we're not born into leadership, but you may well have been born with some certain skills and capabilities and an environment where obviously, and you've spoken about your mother, she was an incredible role model to you. And we're going to come on to that because, you know, we're going to talk about you as a role model when you were the CEO with a number of organizations. And I also used a phrase that I want to pick up on because it's big right now, and that's a force for good. Tell me a little bit more about that, because we haven't had that conversation about force for good, but you just used that phrase, and help me understand where that's come from, because it's big right now when the world is going bonkers.
Yeah, well, it's hard. First of all, it's hard out there. It's just hard. Life is hard.
Yeah.
When I wrote my book, Be Where Your Feet Are, the one thing I told the publisher, St. Martin's Press, I just said, look, this isn't going to be a CEO book where I pat myself on the back and talk about these incredible deals I did. The idea was, you know, I wrote the book because my best friend unfortunately took his own life, and this was my way to heal. So it is a peek behind the curtain, and uncomfortable sometimes look at what really happens in life, the struggles, the falls, the mistakes, and what we learned along the way. And I will tell you, like, during COVID, as I've talked to, I don't know, 70 some odd corporate leadership teams in the past 6 months, it's rough. Like, it is freaking rough. In my house, I have a daughter who's suffering from pretty aggressive social anxiety.
Right.
You know, we all have our own crosses to bear and our burdens that we have to live through and fight through. But there seems to be this moment in time, and whether COVID had a role in that or just accelerated it, I think isolation is like the new kryptonite. I really do. And I think because of that, when you are feeling good and when you're feeling healthy and alive and positive and comfortable and confident, it's incumbent upon us all to be a force for good. Like, we just have to be more aware now. And that can be on a Zoom call when somebody has their video off. You just send them a text. Hey, you doing good? You all right? Somebody misses a deadline. Their voicemail box is full. They haven't responded to an email. Maybe a project is delayed. Maybe you haven't seen them in a month. Just reach out and be that force for good. I mean, the stuff about, like, walking the elderly across the street and going to old folks' homes and doing food drives and, you know, doing something for the Ukrainian refugees, all that stuff's amazing. And the world, I will say, like, if you actually step back and widen the view, charity is fascinating to me. Like, just the notion that people give, you know, they just give, you know, they give money, they give time, they give talents, and they give it because they want to be a force for good. They believe that they've had blessings. I feel like I have an abundance of blessings. And so the more of us that are feeling okay need to do a little bit more. And when your tank is empty, and my tank has been empty, you know, my tank was empty last week for a day. And that's when I'm relying on and hoping that somebody will be the force of good for me. So for me, force of good means a couple things. It means that, you know, you're outwardly focused. You know, you're looking to take some of whatever the blessings you have in your life and share them with others. And it means that hopefully you lift people up when they need it.
You know, this is so important. I was going to say this is so important now. I think it's always been important, but there are things that are happening in the world which perhaps are magnifying it. You used another phrase as well. This is quite spooky, actually, Scott, already. That I was talking to some colleagues earlier today. You talked about a moment in time. Tell me a little bit more about that, because there's always constant change going on and crisis, and we're having to operate in that environment, whether it's as a parent, as a husband, as a boss. Tell me a little bit about what you meant by a moment in time, because is this a moment in time, Scott?
You know, depending on your perspective, yeah. I tend to have a hair longer lead of perspective. I tend to have the ability to zoom out, and I do see this as a moment in time. I do. Now that, you know, and by that I mean this pandemic era, whatever this three-year close it,
yeah,
and it's over. But we're changed forever. You know, we're so impacted. You know, I don't think, I mean, what you're seeing in the workforce, of course, is the great resignation. People yep. just, I'm out. You know, it's a tight workforce, at least in the U.S. We have 3%, less than 3% unemployment. It's hard to keep people. And we, the leaders, we need to be different. Whatever made you successful pre-pandemic is not going to make you successful post-pandemic.
Yeah.
And so we need to rethink of what I call the Great Reset. It's the Great Reset now. So now how do we think about building a culture? We define culture as what you celebrate and what you tolerate. So what are you willing to celebrate and what are you willing to tolerate? And those of us who are so stuck in the sand and we just say, no, everybody back 5 days a week, 6 days a week, whatever it is, get back in the office. Like, I got to be honest with you. Like, it's not going to work.
No, it's not, is it?
I had a young kid, a mentor. He said, yeah, I'm leaving my job. I said, oh, no, kid, congratulations. Where are you going? He's like, I'm going to the DR. And I said, you're going where? He said, I'm going to surf. And I was like, you don't have a job. I can't even, that doesn't work in my world. You know, I grew up, couldn't rub two nickels together. Like, I can't imagine willfully leaving, but the world is different, right? Our priorities have changed. How we see each other, how we see the finite nature of life on this earth has changed. How we understand our faith and our family and our health and our happiness and what we're willing to do to invest in all those things. All that stuff has changed. So as a leader, and I don't care if you're leading at home with your family or at church or at a community group or at work, you know, we just need to be open, as we talked about, palms up.
Yeah.
We need to be open to changing, to learning, to growing, to listening, to asking questions. People do not want to be told what to do right now, I will tell you.
No, I agree.
They want to be part of that discussion. And so humility will help quite a bit, but this is the most exciting, as a leader, I don't think there could be a more exciting time in the world than right now.
You know, Scott, I'm going to come back to that phrase as well. You use palms up in a moment, but a couple of things come out of this. I use this phrase, which I got from, I can't remember where, but I love it. When you press the pause button on a computer, it stops. When you press the pause button on a human being, that's when it starts to think. It sounds as though, I know we've only met recently, but it sounds as if you're very self-aware. Has the pandemic given you time for pause and introspection? Because a lot of what you're talking about now is actually very personal to you. So you kind of, what has happened to you over the last 22, 24 months?
Yeah.
Have you found that you've looked inwards more?
Oh, for sure. I mean, first of all, I left my job. I was in my job for 8 years. And so very much like my young friend who went off to surf in the DR, I went to Mozambique with my daughter to build a school.
Yeah.
And I just spent the last 4 months coaching high school girls basketball because my daughter was a senior and her coach quit. And so it's very much my version of surfing in the DR is what I'm doing. But the question specifically is did the pandemic change? Of course. No more commutes. I mean, remember, I was working, you know, I've been in the sports business for the last 25 some odd years. And I've been working 200 nights a year for the last 15.
Right.
And so 200 nights a year, I mean, you get home at 11, 12 o'clock at night, means you're leaving the house at 7 or so, and you're scratching and clawing to get to teachers' conferences or a school play or one of my daughter's basketball games. So family dinner, by the way.
Yeah.
What's that? It's wonderful. I've had 2 years of family dinners. And so to be able to sit down and talk, what's your high and low for the day? Hey, let's talk about some current issues happening in the world. And so much has happened. We had a whole social justice adventure going on in the U.S. What a great opportunity to talk about things that really matter.
Yeah.
With this Russian invasion of Ukraine, what an incredible opportunity to talk about not just what we're seeing in the media, but actually let's uncover, let's talk about what it actually means. How blessed we are to be in a in a place right now where we don't have to fear for our lives. What would you grab? It was our conversation last night at dinner. What would you grab? You could only take stuff in a backpack. What are you putting in it?
Right. Well, what would you put in it? I've got to ask you that.
In the real world, I'm not having that conversation. Yeah. I'm at two games in one night. So yes, I've also like found much more disciplined practice. I have spent a lot of time thinking about mental health. And so my formula is relatively simple, but it's do something for your mind, something for your body, something for your soul every day. Practice gratitude, put your phone down and get your head up and do something to serve someone else. And so it's seven sure. things. So it's do something for your mind, something for your body, something for your soul. So body is so easy, but we just don't prioritize it. So over the last 3 years, I just prioritized it. And so I wake up and I work out. And so I am physically healthier, of course, but I'm also mentally and spiritually more healthy. I'm learning. Like, I think when we get in these jobs, we just so focus on what we have to do and have to learn and have to read and go through our emails and we can't even do it and all the texts and then social media. And it's like, no, what are you passionate about? What are you proactively going to learn? What podcast did you listen to today? What article did you read? What are you getting better at? You want to learn Spanish? Learn it. And then the soul is always more complicated to talk about at work, but, and you don't have to, you know, I pray and I read scriptures and go to church and that's just important to me and grounds me, but that's not for everybody. But where are you finding stillness? Are you meditating? Stillness. Are you just sitting outside listening to the birds chirping in the morning? That's fine. Are you getting in the car, turning off the radio, shutting down your phone, and just being? We need to be still. And that combination of mind, body, soul, they feed on each other.
Yeah.
And then sleep is something that, you know, I've never been good at.
No,
and
me neither. Finding,
but that's what that's our healing mechanism. Think about that. If you think about it, it's like that heals your brain, that heals your body, it heals your soul. You need sleep.
Well, Scott, let me ask you this. Let me just forgive me for interjecting there, because help the listeners understand, because you've been on a journey. You've done huge reflection in your working, as you say, on the mind, body, soul. But you also talked about, you know, 200 days out of the year coming back late at night, because just help people understand, you've gone from almost one extreme to the other, because you were the CEO in charge of the NBAT, the Philadelphia 76ers, and the National Hockey League team, the New Jersey Devils. So you're in elite sport as the CEO in a high pressure situation. I had the head of performance only earlier this week from the Lawn Tennis Association, who works with elite tennis players, and also for the England rugby team. And he said it's extreme highs and extreme lows. So just tell the listeners a little bit about that environment you lived in order to transition into where you are now and the reflections you're having now.
Yeah, I think, you know, I think, you know, you always learn and get hopefully smarter and better along the way. I remember I was formerly president of Madison Square Garden and the Knicks and Rangers, other elite brands.
Yeah.
And I just remember just like we have this expression in ice hockey. It's called gripping the stick too tight. It just means you're, you know, it's hard to score because you're just gripping, you know. And I feel like that was me because I was really young. I was 37 years old. You know, I probably wasn't ready for a job that big and the intensity of it and the stress of it. And then the financial crisis hit. And then we're putting $1 billion into the building. We're spinning the company out to be a separately traded public company. We are responsible for doing deals. And I was right more than I was effective, you know. And then I come to this next opportunity at HBSE. At the time, it was just the 76ers. We built $2.5 billion of value in 8 years. And it was a sprint and it was fun. And the talent we were able to attract was off the charts. And but it was a rush. And I love that, you know, and I
that's what I mean by extreme highs, right, Scott?
Yeah. So I think I sometimes could be, you know, I feed the beast because it's, you know, I remember one of my executives, Chris Heck, said to me, you have to slow down. Like you have to give us 6 months because we were, you know, we bought the Devils and the Prudential Center and, you know, then we built the Grand Museum and built a training complex, and built an esports business, and built a sports marketing company, and we built a venture firm, and we built a real estate company. He's just like, we're going to break.
But that's intoxicating as well, isn't it, Scott? I talked to many CEOs.
Not for everyone.
No, I know. But when you're in that, right? Sometimes it can be intoxicating and then all-consuming.
Yeah. And so you know, I've always had the ability, you know, my wife, Lisa, you know, we've been married for 26 years. She started in the sports business and she's tough. She's a warrior. She's smart. She's cool. She's intellectually curious. She's fun. And she tells me the truth. And sometimes I need that
truth to power.
So, and, and, And she's a wonderful partner. She's not a nag, but I'll tell you, like, one or two times a year, she's like, I need you home. And I was like, okay. And I just drop everything and bounce. She's the one who says, whoa, you know, you're okay. Hey, you need to take a couple of days. So she's been a good, you know, sense of reality. And then my kids, my daughters, they're 22, 18 and 15 now.
Yeah.
You know, I'm engaged with them. Like, I didn't miss their lives. And that's one thing I have a really source of pride around. I know their friends. I've coached them in basketball since they're 5 years old. You know, they're my buddies. So for me, and my wife does the heavy lifting and raise my kids for sure. But they're a big part of my life and I'm a big part of their lives. And for me, that has always been like a grounding source.
You know, Scott, this takes me into, we hear the phrase work-life balance. And I know you've got a view of how the working life and the personal life are inextricably linked. So tell us a little bit about that from your experience, because you can't untangle the two, really, can you?
Yeah, I don't know what they call it in the UK, but they call it seesaw in the UK, the kids' playground thing.
Yep.
So you go to seesaw, it's like, it's never fun this way, you know?
The flat.
And when it's in the middle, it's just not fun. And so my sense is like, I don't believe in work-life balance. When I'm speaking to, in particular, this rising generation who I absolutely love, that's the first thing they always ask me, which is always like a hair disappointing, but that's another story for another day. But I would say, how do you find work-life balance? I was like, well, I don't believe in it. They're like, well, what do you mean? I said, no, I believe in that you be present, be where your feet are, right? So effectively, when I'm home, I am home. When I'm with my daughter, I do not have my phone. By the way, not perfect at this, but this is my aspirational best self.
It's like, we're all work in progress, right? Scott. We're all work in progress.
No, we all are. But like, you know, we set up rules. Like, there are no phones in the kitchen for us. There are no phones or electronics in the bedrooms. Like, we are trying to create an environment that where we can be present. By the way, when I'm at work, I'm not worried about my daughter's calculus test. I'm not. Now, if I have to call her and I'm thinking of her, I'll call her so I can be present with her on the phone. But the notion that you can like find this mythical balance, I will tell you, like, I haven't met a successful person in the world who doesn't work hard.
Well, it's not the Holy Grail, isn't it? No one's going to find it.
I don't know if it's the Holy Grail. That's my point. My point, I think the Holy Grail is being present.
Yeah.
And so I'm with you here right now. I am with you. Okay. You are with me. I can feel it. You know, I can feel the energy. But we've all been in conversations where the person's not with us, right? How's that feel? What if your kid is feeling you, your kid's struggling, she's on the couch, she's flipping through another office rerun, and you're like flipping through your phone again? It's like, we have to spend the time. Think about the time you have with your kids, quality time. Think about it. In the morning, I've got a couple teenagers now, still now, it's chaos in the morning. Like, we just try to get them out of the house without the house burning down. It's like someone forgot a thermos and someone, you know, lost their you know, science book, and another one didn't charge her phone or computer, whatever the crisis of the day is, like, get them out. Then I work, they're at school, they come home, we have dinner. That's a moment. Okay. So I get 45 minutes with them. How much real time are you having with your partner and your kids? The stuff that matters. When are we having real conversations? When are we talking about life? When are we talking about joy? When are we talking about mental health? What are we talking? When does that happen? You know what? We're just going through life because we're like, we got our laptop up and we got the phone on, the music's playing. It's like, we have to take advantage of the time we have. And if you just said, you know what? You're right. I'm going to take 60 minutes. 60 minutes. That's it. 60 minutes with my partner and my kids, and we're going to do it.
It's important stuff.
That's time of, that's being present and saying, like, okay, it's not being unrealistic. You know?
Yeah.
And you know what? And if you have a daughter, she's like, Dad, I have homework. Dad, I'm talking to my girlfriend's thing. Dad, I want, I need you for 1 hour. One hour a day. And I think we can be better and do better if we make sure that our focus is on being present and less on work-life balance.
Yeah, no, I love that. I think that's going to resonate with so many people who are listening to this episode, Scott. I really do. And so it's understandable as well that you are being asked to speak to more and more leaders and leadership teams, because you have a point of view, you have a perspective, and that's rooted in a foundation of having lived through it. But I want to come on to something, because you and I chatted a couple of weeks ago and you had some thoughts, didn't you, about successful people and some of the things that make people successful. And I just wanted to share some of that with the listeners from your experience, because I know we talked about Well, you tell us, what are those, some of those critical ingredients of successful people?
So I've had the good or bad fortune of hiring hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of people over the last, in particular, the last 15 years. And the three characteristics that clearly stand out above the rest are, one is work unreasonably hard. It's the one thing you can control. You know, you can't control much in life. You know, you control your attitude and how hard you work. And so working unreasonably hard is a differentiator, and it matters. And particularly when you come out of university and you go into the workforce and you don't have many skills, definable skills, despite your confidence. the second thing is intellectual curiosity.
Yes.
And that I learned from the great David Stern, the former commissioner of the NBA. And till his dying day, God bless, rest his soul, he was learning and studying and reading. I would get on a plane with him and he'd have 8-9 inches of articles, the old school guy with actually paper articles. And he wouldn't just be reading about sports. He wouldn't just be reading about business. He'd be reading about life sciences and reading about geopolitical issues. And he was just like always learning. And I think that, to me, because the world is changing, like you're either reading about, if you're running a company right now, reading about Web 3.0 or you're not.
Yep.
You know? And you might say, well, it has no applicability. And I'll say, yes, it does. You better understand blockchain and cryptocurrencies and NFTs and the metaverse. I'll just read, listen to podcasts, get up to speed, have somebody brief you. It's not about getting brief. It's about being intellectually curious enough to want to learn and want to grow, because whatever business you're in, it's changing.
Okay.
I read a stat. I don't know if it's true, but it's something like 90% of the Fortune 500 companies. I'm going to butcher this stat. I shouldn't even give it.
That's all right. They can look it up, whoever's listening.
Yeah. So somebody will butcher me on social media. Some stat of the turnover in the Fortune 500. The companies are just going to go away. And so the world is changing. So how are you evolving? It's because you're going to learn. And when you learn, you understand what the trends are and what's happening and how to take advantage of it. And the third thing is to be an extraordinary teammate. And that's something that is lost on a lot of young people, unfortunately.
Right.
But I'll just give you some firsthand knowledge experience. Is that I always talk to the young people we would hire in my last two companies. I'd say, hey, look to your right and look to your left. There are 100 people here your age. Can you imagine if they're your friends? And 20 years from now, you look up and they're running companies all over the world. Or they have senior positions, executive positions all over the world. You have friends at 100 companies. What if half of them stay in sports? You have 50 friends all over the sports business. And what's your cost of that? Be a nice person. Look out for other people. Don't always put yourself first. Lend a hand. If you have something that's working, help, share. You know, and all that stuff you learn in kindergarten, do it. And so I think those are three things. Work unreasonably hard, be intellectually curious, and be an extraordinary teammate.
You know, Scott, again, I love this, and obviously I know about it briefly when we had our initial chat. I love what you talked about, even if the stat is wrong, you know, in relation to S&P companies not existing anymore, because I know a lot of senior executives and CEOs I speak to are really worried about one word, and the word is irrelevant. They don't want to become irrelevant. And you're right. If they're not insatiably and intellectually curious, then that's when they're disrupted. And then the other part I just reflect to you on is you're talking about the youngsters coming through. I've got two teenagers who are around somewhere doing something. Who knows what? I don't probably even want to know what. But it's also people moving from the mindset of the individual contributor, because we all want to feel that we've got something to bring, and becoming the team player. And so any thoughts in relation to that as people are listening and thinking themselves, I've got to make that transition from the individual contributor because I'm gifted or I'm very talented at this, but I need to become the enterprise leader as someone is becoming more senior, or I just need to be more of a team player.
I don't think they're mutually exclusive. Like I believe that more self-centered people will advance a hair quicker in that first level.
Right.
And then they'll get leapfrogged from there on out. They don't change their behavior. So my sense is that the best leaders are extraordinary teammates, because the world has changed. The way you deal with executives has changed. Like, they're your teammate. I don't care. Like, General Patton, it'd be tough in the business world right now.
Yeah.
I had plenty of bosses that were authoritarian and tell you how it is. And by the way, there are times when that style has to be used. If you're in a high change situation. You know, COVID, the company's falling apart, revenues are dropping, you can't have a, can't find customers. Sure. You go right to authoritarian style, of course, right? When there's a high change, high risk, yes, you definitely have to direct and control, no doubt. However, we as leaders, we have to be a little bit more malleable and way more flexible. And our toolbox has to be a lot wider. And one size does not fit all. Mm. If you want an extraordinary culture and you want to attract, keep, and develop extraordinary talent, we just need to pull out all of our skills. And part of that as a leader is being a team. I remember, you know, one of the, let's go back to David Stern.
Yeah.
He was a very authoritarian, managed by fear and intimidation, would call you and threaten you and slam the phone down on you, all that kind of stuff. But I will tell you that, you know, I had some personal health issues in my family. First guy to pick up the phone and call me, I don't even know how he found out. It's him.
Right.
First guy to make sure that, you know, my we need some help and we got into the best hospital in the world because of him. Now, he's just being a teammate with compassion and love. And this is one of the nastiest guys I've ever been around. So you have like, you're just seeing different sides, right? And by the way, he wasn't nasty like in his soul. He was wonderful in his soul, but he believed that fear and intimidation were the best ways to motivate people. And I don't.
And it was an old school approach in some ways.
In many sectors. Go back to the sporting side. There are coaches, you know, all around the world that have made a career out of screaming and yelling.
Yeah.
I'm not sure you're going to see as many of them now or in the next 5 years or 10 years because, you know, the other people are opting out of that. They won't tolerate it. They'll just go to the DR. You know what I mean? Like world is different.
Do you know what, Scott, a lovely story. I spoke to one guest, actually, who's actually former NBA. It was John Amici. And I was chatting to John. It was funny. He actually said, you know what, I lose my team when I shout at them for a week. And I said, well, when was the last time you shouted at your team? He said 30 years ago. So that was a lovely example of he made that mistake once and then never made it again. And he's passionate and a very strong point of view in relation to leadership. And that's akin to what you're saying. And you know that I'm passionate about human-centered leadership. And a lot of what you've been describing is not the technical expert. It's not always being the hero as a CEO potentially or always the problem solver, but actually being the person who can empower, trust, include, be vulnerable and be curious and engage people.
Right. And what is the secret to that? It's humility, right?
Yeah.
Like every aspect that you just named comes from a sense of humility. And that's not a characteristic that we oftentimes affiliate and associate with great leaders. But actually, it's the one characteristic, in my humble opinion, that will be the defining attribute of those who are successful in this next wave coming in the Great Reset.
Let me come in some ways full circle because I want to come back to the book, Be Where Your Feet Are, because you very kindly shared that there was a very personal reason that in some ways was a catalyst for you writing that. And thank you for sharing that. But I want to understand what were some of the real learning points that came to you from the process of writing the book? Because I wrote a book just a couple of years ago and I remember, yes, there was hopefully decent content in the book, but there were some things that I got going through the process and the reflection of thinking about it and then writing it.
So, I mean, talk about humility. Holy moly.
Go on.
I just tell you this quick story talking about humility. I think there's a wonderful balance between humility and confidence. They can live very comfortably together.
Yeah.
They can, you know? And I walk through the world very confidently. And oftentimes that is perceived from the outside very differently than I am or the way I live. And that's okay. That is life. And that's, you know, so I go into this meeting because I need an agent. I don't know if you had an agent, but my friend said, you need an agent. I was like, all right. So I called two of my friends who run two of the biggest talent agencies in the world.
Yeah.
And when I say friends, like I'm the godfather of their children, friends, like, hey, uncle, you know, like that kind of friends.
Yep.
So the agents are, you know, down the chain a bit. And the first meeting went like this. And he sits down and before the menu is brought out, he says, you're not a writer. This isn't a book and nobody will ever buy it. I'm like, good lunch.
Yeah, thanks very much. Good night. God bless.
My next meeting, was with a another good friend who was gracious enough to have two agents read the manuscript. And the one woman started, she's young. I mean, everybody's young to me now, but she was, I don't know, maybe in her 30s. Apparently, like, you know, the big shot up and coming agent. And she looked me in the eye and she talks for 20 minutes. And I was like, so let me see if I got this right. You don't think this is a book and you don't think there's any chance a publisher buys it. And you don't think anybody will read it, even if anyone's dumb enough to buy it. Is that what you just said? She's like, yes. I'm like,
that's another short lunch.
And then there's the older guy who's in there because there are two agents. The older guy says, I agree with everything she just said, except for I could sell it because I could sell anything, even yours. I'm like, this is lovely. So when I tell you that it started with like a, whoo. I remember calling my brother and one of my brothers, Matt, I was explaining and he's like, what are you doing? And I was like, what do you mean what am I doing? He's like, you're a salesman for goodness sake. What's your sales pitch? I go, my sales pitch? He goes, Scott, you're kidding, right? And I was like, light went on. He's like, okay, let's work on this. So anyway, he worked with me. The next person I went to go see, I sold them on why this mattered. And they helped me get a writer, Michelle Bender, who's amazing and terrific. And she helped edit it and shape it and form it and write. And so I needed help and I got help. And voila, you know, you wake up later and you're at this best-selling book and you're like, holy moly, how'd this happen? So it was pretty humbling. So I learned that you can't throw out everything you've learned over the course of your life when you're going through this process.
Yeah.
Secondly, I learned get help. Like, you know, it's like, it's this thing has plagued me my whole life. And it's kind of flies in the face of the humility point. Like, I feel like when I'm drowning, I don't raise my hand. Like, and I think that's when I'm emotionally drowning, when I'm physically drowning, when I'm spiritually drowning. I don't do a great job of just like, you know, it's like, hey, can someone help me? And so, and at this point, like I didn't understand. I just needed help, you know? And I think that's a great, great lesson. And the third, probably the most powerful is I got notes from perfect strangers. And the guy who convinced me to write this book, cause I was like, I'm not writing it. It's my own personal journal. I'm never showing this to anybody. He said, what if you could impact one person? And I was like, well, that's unfair to say. He's like, no. So let's play it out.
Yeah.
You impact one person. Is it worth it? I'm like, yeah, of course. It's like, then do it. And I was like, so then to go from that to getting notes from people who you don't know, perfect strangers, and saying it helped them be a better dad or a better CEO or a better manager, a better leader.
It's
better,
powerful,
you
know, isn't it?
Like all that stuff is like, or, hey, I cried through your first chapter. I can't, you know, like it's just humbling, you know, to feel like your words matter, right?
No, I get that. And we had a lovely email. Every now and again, we get a lovely email. I got a lovely email last week to someone who said that they listened to one of the episodes and they'd already used something in the episode in a client conversation. Awesome. And when you get something like that, you just think, actually, wow, it is worth it. And I hope this episode and all of the episodes help people quench that thirst for the intellectual curiosity. And what I want to do is I want to ask you, how can people connect with you, Scott, if they want to continue the conversation and tap into some of the work that you're doing at the moment? How do they do that?
The best way to get me is follow me on LinkedIn or follow me on Twitter. That's the best way. You can DM me on either one and I'd happy to engage.
Great. And Scott O'Neill on both those platforms, is it?
Yep.
I've got another question that's just sprung to mind. With all of the experiences and the success you've had and the reflections that you've been through, what's next for Scott O'Neill?
That's it. My wife's asking the same question.
Well, I think she's going to have to be a guest on the podcast. Let's be honest now, Scott, after the description you gave.
You know, I have a non-compete in place, so I've got a few months to figure it out.
Yeah.
But I will tell you, I'm looking at different things. I know what I am passionate about. I know what gets me out of bed in the morning. What gets me out of bed in the morning is I like to develop. I want to help develop the next generation of great leaders. That's right. I'm really passionate about it. I'm very passionate about leaving the world better than I found it. So I would like a platform where I can drive some impact. And I generally get energy from turnarounds and growth. So I know that's my sphere. I'm just not sure what that actually looks like.
Well, that means really the world is your oyster if you can find those critical ingredients. Listen, Scott, I could talk to you for hours, which would be completely unfair, but I just wanted to say you've been an incredible guest. I hope you've enjoyed coming onto the Leadership Enigma podcast.
I've had a ball, and I am one of your best listeners as well.
Oh, my friend, and I hope that you will, when you find your next challenge, here we go, Scott, I want you to come back onto the show.
Let's go.
And I tell like me that. Where we are in the next chapter of Scott O'Neill. Is that a deal?
That's a deal.
Love that. Take care, my friend.
Join us again next week for more tips and strategies on the Leadership Enigma. We'd love to hear your comments on today's show, as well as suggestions for future topics and guests. Get in touch with your host on LinkedIn or our YouTube channel. And remember to get your daily learning to build success at www.insights.emeritus.org. Download the Insights app and start learning for free. Please don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe on all your major podcast platforms. Thanks for listening.